This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I'm always great to be alive.
Well, yes, of course, especially at this time of year when we're in the middle of the changing of the seasons, cooler in the evening and then still a little bit warmer in the day. It's a wonderful time of year.
It's a wonderful time of year. Now, what I'm worried about is all these things in California that's at the port that may not get here.
I saw that.
I'm very, very worried. They said this debacle will not be unbuckled until next spring.
Yes. They say it's going
now
to take a very long time.
How can they sit there from now till spring with these containers, and merchants need them, we need them, the public needs them. Let's go help them and get them unloaded.
Exactly. I saw something about, and I didn't get all the details, but I saw something about how somebody has been authorized to do something like 24 hours a day and all night something. I don't know if it's the shipping of the items or what happened, but I know that something broke through. To be honest, I didn't even know any of that was even happening. But then all of a sudden it came through, and they're like, "This is just a bottleneck, and so we need to clear this up." So,
well, and then remember, everything out there is union on the docks.
Yeah, it is.
It's the biggest union in the world and the toughest. These are, I don't want to say thugs, but they are tough, tough people. We don't want to meet them on the street.
Yeah.
So it's scary that they control all this.
Yeah.
And I want to see them working 24 hours a day. Unions don't do that.
No.
Unless they have extra unions that can come and help, because, you know, they have everything in black and white. We only work on this day. We only work this many hours, and they don't help each other. That's what I never could understand about unions. If there's a package laying there, and it goes to a certain department, only that guy can touch it. The others would not dare pick it up and move it for him.
Wow, really?
Everything is regimented. I mean, if it's your job to do this, you don't help anybody else. Your job is here, okay. You go home and leave the work there. It's just, it's a crazy world. Really crazy.
Wow, I didn't know any of that. I just didn't know. I didn't know enough about that to even have any idea.
Yeah, unions are completely different. You know, we are a state that can do anything. You know, it's a right to work state.
Yeah.
And all these out there are not a right to work, and that's what the administration now is wanting: is everybody to be unionized. They want everybody to have to join a union. Can you imagine in Texas?
No.
Telling people they have to join a union?
No, that won't fly. That ain't going to happen.
That's just not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
But anyway, that's where our packages are. And if you can't get anything, think about where it's at. It's in California. It's on the docks.
Well, they're kind of crazy out there anyway. So, you know, they do things very different than the rest of us.
And a lot of the retailers are saying you need to shop right now for Christmas. And whatever it is you want, you go and you hide it somewhere now.
Yeah,
That's what they're saying.
They were saying, you know, you need to do your online shopping now. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine what would happen if, like, all of a sudden holiday shopping was, like, advanced by months and everybody just did all their shopping online right now? My goodness,
yeah.
We would create another situation. Holy smokes.
Well, and I can tell you how bad it is. Lands End, and they supply the uniforms to most of the private schools in the nation. All across the nation. You know, they're an old, old company out there. And we ordered some uniforms 3 months ago. And they're saying every day, we're very sorry, we don't have it. We don't have it.
Really?
Yes. So they cannot get these uniforms, a lot of the pieces out right now, because they just don't have them. And we've been ordering from them through the school systems for years and never had a problem. Usually in 4 or 5 weeks, you've got your orders. And they say we're just really, really behind, you know, because of the pandemic. They were the manufacturing was shut down there for a long time. And now they can't seem to get the parts.
Wow. I had no idea. And you've been waiting on this for 3 months.
Yes, 3 months. And those jackets have not shown up yet. And I don't know if they will.
My goodness.
They're just saying, you know, we're sorry.
And there's no, you know, ETA. There's no estimate. There's no guess. It's just, you're just hanging out there in limbo.
Yeah. In fact, the other things I wanted to order, they said, no, we're not even going to take an order for them. We don't have any idea when they'll ever show up.
Really?
So, you know, yeah.
Wow.
So they just said, we do not know when they'll ever show up. So we won't even let you place an order for hold.
That's scary.
Yeah. It is scary.
I couldn't imagine the situation that it is right now with additional the burden and the stress of an entire country doing holiday shopping on top of it. It might break the system.
That's what I'm afraid of, because there is so much, you know, at the port in Los Angeles. I mean, tremendous, tremendous. And they're saying the bottleneck will be here till spring.
Yeah.
How can that be? And people need all these things.
Yeah. My goodness. We've got some friends that that are around the country in different areas, and they work in the auto industry, and they were saying that the situation with like automobile chips is getting really, really bad, and that they have a lot of auto dealers that don't have any new cars for sale because they don't have any with chips. And so, you know, now that's, you know, becoming a situation for a lot of people.
It is a big problem. Chevrolet said they were going to leave one part out because that particular chip they cannot get.
Yeah.
And I did a survey with several of the dealerships, and they said, if you ordered a car right now, you might get it in December or January.
Wow.
If it's not in stock, you would have to order and get on a waiting list.
Yeah.
A waiting list for a car.
Yeah. Just for...
They don't have them.
We're not even
talking...
And they
can't make them right now.
I know. That's the scary thing. It's like some lots are like virtually empty. And then others that have some for sale, the prices are so high because of supply and demand. It's like, my goodness. And we're not talking about ordering like a Maz or anything like that. We're talking about just a regular everyday vehicle. Nothing special.
But, right. And they said the only thing they're doing is selling used cars, and they are at a premium.
Yes.
You can sell your used car for a ton of money right now.
Yeah.
And because that's all they've got to sell. Is used cars.
Man.
And used pickups.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's a strange time. You know, in our country, we've always had everything. You know, with cars, trucks, go to the grocery store, there's always plenty of supplies, you know, and now, you know, you just can't always get all that.
I know it. Groceries is another thing. You mentioned the grocery stores. I've gone into the store a couple of times, and it's just like there are, I've seen, you know, parts of shelves where there should be like one particular item completely empty. We've also seen the same thing with like when we order stuff online, they'll say, well, you know, that's not available, or it's available for shipping at a later date, and there's like no date, and it's like, what is happening to like all the products and the goods? It's like, what's going on here?
It's gonna be interesting. And they're saying bathroom tissue, two packages now. You can have two packages. That's it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're
going to go back to a shortage. They said groceries are higher than they've been in 40 years.
Yes. Yes, I saw the inflation numbers the other day when they came out. I think it was Wednesday or maybe Thursday. I don't know. But they came out this week and it's like, oh my goodness, the prices, you know, the change in price, gasoline prices, grocery prices. I mean, everything. I saw all these numbers and I'm like, goodness gracious, everything is up, you know, 20%, 40%, 45%. It's like, how can this be?
Well, oil is what, $83 a barrel for the first time, and that's going to help everybody in the Permian Basin. A lot of the companies that weren't drilling maybe will go ahead and come back in and drill.
Yeah,
you know, they've got the leases, everybody, and of course Shell is selling all theirs, like for what, $8 billion?
Yeah.
$8 billion, I believe it is.
I think so. Yeah.
They're getting out, and I don't know anything about the situation, but that's a lot of money, isn't it?
It is. That's you can't really ignore that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you say it real fast. Say it real fast, you know?
It's kind of like magic.
Gosh.
And I knew you know this is coming, but 6 weeks from this weekend is Thanksgiving weekend.
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Is all we've got. Wow. Well, yesterday I did see them advertising to do your turkeys for you.
Really?
I mean, they're already on that. Everybody's going to be doing their base turkeys. Hopefully there's plenty of turkeys available.
Well, yes.
I haven't checked that.
I know.
But hopefully all these people have got their turkeys in, whether they're fresh or frozen, and going to have those available for us.
Yes. You hope, and then you hopefully there's not a grocery shortage for Thanksgiving feasts. And then you've got, you know, Thanksgiving is always, you know, like you've got Black Friday shopping. And so then you think, well, my goodness, then the official holiday season shopping season starts. And this is like, well, what's going to happen there? And so there's a lot of questions right now.
They say that the good that Black Friday will not be as good as it has in the past because there's not going to be as much available and the bargains will not be there.
Wow.
That's what they're thinking because of the shortages. You know, they're not going to have all this to say, okay, we're going to just discount really big like they usually do.
Yeah.
They may not have the availability. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. You know, it's starting to come into focus a little bit about, you know, the situations that some people have said may end up happening by the end of the year. It's like, it seems like this week especially, a lot of things are starting to kind of come into focus a little bit about what might cause a potential situation. I know you were like waiting on, you know, the Thanksgiving. I know that's always kind of a shock, you know, because it's like 6 weeks away. But
it is a shock when you tell me it's 6 weeks. I know it was coming, but I wasn't thinking about the date, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've been doing the math. I've got like a calendar and I'm marking off the days. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're getting ready. Well, I haven't even started on that project.
Oh, well, you might want to start.
Yeah, I might want to start on that project. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I have been dwelling on the fact that, as it gets closer to the end of the year, as maturities, I've been thinking about maturities. I've been thinking about investments. I've been watching the stock market from afar to see what they're doing. The crypto, I watch that because that I find that just the most interesting thing of all. You know, it's 54,000 now.
Really?
And when we talked about that 2 or 3 weeks ago, it's 48,000.
Yeah.
Now it's 54,000.
Wow. So it just keeps going up.
It keeps going up. And this is like a dream. You know, I mean, it's got to be a dream.
Wow.
I mean, I just can't imagine. But people are trading in it. They're buying things with it. People are saying, yeah, we'll take that crypto. And I just don't understand it.
It's like an actual thing.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, I don't understand it, I can tell you.
Yeah, I don't either. I think a lot of people don't. But it's just like it seems to be a thing, so we'll use it, I guess? I don't know.
I don't know. I think people better really be sophisticated if they're dealing in it. I mean, Joe Pugh Public should not be involved in it. Unless you've got a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, because I would hate to see somebody get involved in that and lose it all.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's too new. It's too new to to really depend on, I think.
I think you're right. You know, it's probably one of those situations where it's not good for somebody to just kind of like experiment and just kind of like guess and see what happens. It's not really, you know, you probably need to be well-versed in something like that to really get
Well, it's kind of like doctors and lawyers, people when they retire, they decide that they're really smart and that they'll do trading on their own. I mean, you know, and this happens to them and they go, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have any stop losses. I've lost all this money. What in the heck am I going to do?
Yeah.
And it's because they go out there in left field and get involved in some trading deals, platforms they don't understand, they don't know anything about.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets them. So, you know, a lot of people belong to these trading clubs. They go and they talk about it and they, you know, I went and visited one of those one time.
Really?
And there was these lawyers and retired accountants and all these people, you know, that were trading on their own in this club. And I found it very interesting, you know. I said, you know, this could turn into something really unnatural.
Unnatural.
Yeah. You know, like the loss of a lot of money. But they would just talk about what all they'd done and that they were, you know, just starting this trading platform, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
These are people that have been doing something else all their life, and now they've become a genius,
yeah.
And they're going to do all this trading and things they don't know anything about.
Yeah. A lot of people are very, very smart with a lot of things, but sometimes it doesn't translate into just, like, you can't just...
Into other things, yeah.
Exactly.
It's something you haven't ever done, and you're suddenly a genius at it. So I think that's kind of it would scare me. Let's just put it that way.
It's a little dangerous.
It is a little dangerous, to say the least. Well, let's talk about something profitable, like life settlements. We had a maturity yesterday. It was a $400,000 maturity.
Wow.
Yes, we did this one on 11/18. Is when we sent it to the bank.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a lady, and it's the Zellot policy, Z-E-L-L-A-T. And we've got 6 people in it. So they made some money yesterday, and it is matured on time, really. So that's a good thing. I love it when a maturity comes in on time.
Wow, that's like right at 3 years. It sounds like that's exactly what they...
yeah, it was about a 3-year policy.
Wow.
So that's a good thing. And it was 19% profit.
Oh, my.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and the lady was born in 1948. She was 70 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. But, cancer is a hard thing to beat. So it came in just like we thought it would and like she thought it would, I guess.
Yeah.
You never know what they're thinking, but that's kind of what we thought. So those people will be able to reinvest and make some more money, but 19% is not bad.
Yeah, that's that's a pretty good chunk of change.
It is. So that was a good thing. You know, right now people are averaging about 22-24% on most of their investments. Most of them have got enough policies that they've got a good interest stream coming all the time, which really helps. They know they've got that interest coming in, and so that's good. And a lot of people, you know, have added money to their portfolios. They've bought more policies. A lot of people come every once in a while and put an extra $50,000, an extra $100,000 in. Like if they sell their business, they may put another $500,000 or $1 million in. And a lot of people are fully invested right now. They're going to have to either sell one of their businesses or take it out of something else and put more money in while they're waiting on maturities. So we'll see how that comes out.
So is that really kind of like the landscape right now? We're just waiting for maturities to happen?
Yes, we're waiting for several maturities. We're watching them every day. To be right on top of it when these maturities get here, where we can get the death certificate and get it right over to the life insurance company, where we can get their money a little quicker.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like things are really firing on all cylinders right now. And I know that, you know, like when we were looking at, you know, the in the springtime, especially, things were still kind of weird. And there was like a really strange situation going on with policies and, you know, people, you know, trying to outbid everybody and all this competition. And then that game where people were demanding more for their policies and then, you know, just got to be this really strange thing. It sounds like all that has calmed down and everything is just really kind of like smooth sailing right now. It's what it sounds like.
It is, and we're just waiting on maturities. We're enlisting new clients all the time. We're getting new clients, new money in, more investors. And as I said, usually right here this time of year, we will have quite a few maturities come in, so people will have more money, more interest. And we've gotten really good policies lately. I think we've really had a more than the early in the year. We've had a lot of really good policies come in. We've put people in some really good policies.
That's fantastic. You know, and it really kind of gives you some glimpse into, you know, what may be happening ahead, as far as, you know, the, at least maybe the next several months. It sounds like a good time for anybody who's been maybe thinking about getting into life settlements. This would be a really ideal time, is from what it sounds like, to really kind of get the ball rolling and get started in it, especially if, you know, things seem like they may be a little bit shaky in the next few months, you know, with all the things that we were talking about earlier. Is this a good time to, you know, maybe think about something a little bit more conservative than maybe the stock market or other options?
I think it is. You know, people have different opinions. They'll get in the stock market, they'll get out of the stock market. But I have found the ones that have come to us, that stayed with us all these years, you know, since 2013, 2014, they've made very good money with us. It's been consistent. They've made a lot of money. They haven't lost any money, and that's really important. Now, somebody said one day, you can't say that. Well, there was some old companies that we were involved with that we just represented them. We didn't own them, didn't have anything to do with them. And those people, it's taken them a long time to get their money. But with our policies on these that we've been doing for ourselves, you know, we've made good money for the clients since 14. You know, everybody's gotten their interest, they've gotten their principal back, and we've renewed and renewed and made them more money. And that's the way it's planned to do, you know, where that if you have a maturity, we reinvest it for you. If you need interest out of it, you can take your interest. And a lot of people, you know, keep a certain amount there for emergencies. They keep a certain amount there to take out if they need it. So a lot of people have some cash, and then the rest of it's invested. And then a lot of them, you know, have IRAs. And if they're over 70 and a half, they're taking money out of those IRAs every year.
Mm. So really, it sounds like a good time for, I guess, people to not only because of the economy itself and the situation that we may be facing, but as far as like the landscape within life settlements, it sounds like a lot of the competition is down. It sounds like, you know, there is a lot of I guess when you're bidding on these, you're bidding for, is it fair to say, for, you know, without the competition, the bids don't have to be quite as tight, and so there are greater profit margins. Is that fair to say, or am I looking at this wrong?
Yes, I think there's a little more profit if we're not just having to bid it down to the wire, because as you know, early in the year we were bidding it down to the wire. I mean, we were having to give up our profit lots of times in order to get a policy for the clients.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like to make a little bit along with them. And, but it was tough earlier in the year because the other big companies were bidding hard and we were having to shave everything where, you know, there wasn't a lot of profit in a lot of those policies for us. And that was okay. We did it anyway. But right now is a good time to be in a policy. It's a good time to add to your account because we are getting some fabulous policies in. I've done two or three in the last 2 weeks that were 17 months, 11 months. Some really short-term ones have come in, and we have put a lot of people in those.
Wow. So, yeah, it seems like we're in a really good phase right now. as far as, you know, competition, as far as, you know, getting things set up as we go into like the last couple of months of the year? Is there anything in particular that happens as far as like wealth management, things like that? People, you know, should be doing something before the end of the year, maybe start thinking about it now. Remember, I don't know, tax wise or, you know,
well, lots of times there is, you know, and of course, remember always any premiums you have to pay is deductible. And somebody asked me the other day for a copy of that law, and I sent it to them.
Really?
Yeah, it was a CPA that was doing somebody's taxes, and they didn't know where to look it up, so we sent them that. But there's all kinds of good things happening. You know, right now people are making, as I said, about 22-24% on an average. This policy was 19%. But all of them have a good percent of interest. You know, once you get it, it's locked in. They're not going to ask you to take a smaller amount. It's not like in the stock market, because your stock is only worth what it is the day you take out of it. In other words, the day you decide to sell it, that's what it's worth. And if it's down that day, you get less. If it's up, you get more. So it's always, you know, a guessing game, what you've really made. People say, oh, well, I made $70,000. That's today you made it. What will it be worth next week?
That's true.
Or the week after that? And a lot of the people that come to me, I speak on authority because they tell me what they made in the stock market or what they lost in the stock market over a period of years. Yes, there may be some years they made something, but then there's some years that they didn't. And when you laid it all end to end, this one guy, and this is a year ago, he said he actually made about 2% over a period of years.
2%?
Yeah. Yeah. So some years he might have made 17% or 5%, but it wasn't consistent.
Yeah.
And we had those bad years. Well, then it wiped out a lot of their principal. It took them a long time to get their principal back and their interest.
Yeah. I remember there was a couple of really bad years.
Yeah. And you have no guarantee. When you're in the stock market, it's just whatever happens. You know, it can be good and it can be not so good.
Tell me the truth. What do you think might happen in the next couple months? Do you think we might be, as far as stock market goes, as far as general economy health goes, do you think we might be in for some rough water?
Well, we could be. You know, inflation is rearing its ugly head. You know, inflation is coming along. And, you know, when you have a high inflation, you know, it doesn't do as well. So we don't know what's going to happen, you know. Everything in Washington is always in turmoil. It's the biggest turmoil in the world.
And anything that happens.
I sometimes think if Washington wasn't running everything and spending our money, we'd have a lot more money to spend. Had you ever thought about that? I mean,
wow, it sounds so simple, but yet it's so so deep and profound.
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
If they weren't running things, I think we'd have a lot more money because on a whim, they say, oh, we'll just put $50 billion over here. We'll put $1 billion over here. They don't know how much $1 billion is.
No.
If they did, they'd quit doing it. And then they write bills that they don't know what's in them. If you and I tried to run our companies that way, we'd be out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we said, well, you know, we don't know what in the heck is in this, but we're going to do it anyway. You know? We'd be out of business in about 6 months. You know, it just wouldn't work that way in the real world.
Yeah.
And Washington is not the real world. I hate to say that.
Oh,
it's
not.
It's just like they're living in a dream world.
It is. It's like fantasy land somewhere.
Fantasy land. Everything is roses to them. The more money they can spend, it doesn't matter to them.
No.
They have a lifetime income.
Mm-hmm.
Most politicians, and I don't really want to get into politics, most politicians go up there with good intentions, and they're poor. They don't have a lot of money. When they come to the end, they're worth billions.
Yes.
I mean, they're worth millions and millions and millions.
Yeah.
And so they did something good, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For themselves.
I mean, that's right, for themselves. So when I've looked back on all these people, I go, how did they do it?
Yeah.
You know, out here, we didn't increase our wealth like that.
Yeah.
But people in politics, they know what to do, and they come back, and they're suddenly very wealthy. That little salary of $200,000 to $300,000 a year is nothing.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of reckless spending, so to say, in Washington. But I know that, you know, for us, like just people like who are living our daily lives, we try to be a little bit more conservative, but more attentive, I guess, you know, spending and investing in the right things and, you know, things that are actually going to do us ourselves good, make us some profit, you know, grow our wealth, and not only just growing, but also maintaining things. Because I think, you know, a lot of times never invest more than what you can afford to lose or something like that.
That's exactly right. When you go into the stock market, always think about it this way. If things should go wrong, how much can I afford to lose?
Yeah.
And if you can afford to lose it all or half of it, don't worry about it. Just do it.
Yeah.
But if you say, I really cannot afford to lose one dime, I'm close to retirement, it might not be the best place for you.
Yeah. And I think the older we get, then the closer we get to retirement, the more we want to, you know, kind of reduce that risk so that we're not going back to work at, you know, 75 or, you know, all of a sudden our dreams of traveling the world and doing all this and that and the other thing after retirement are gone because another 2008 happens. And I think, you know, when people are kind of, you know, they say that as you get a little bit older, you get a little bit smarter. And I think probably people are maybe not only getting to that place where it's like, you know, I'd really like to retire in 5 years. I don't want to have to start all over if something were to happen. And, you know, just kind of looking at things, and this is like, you know, things look like we could have some rough waters ahead. Maybe, maybe not. Let's not take the risk. You know, if we don't have to, let's get into life settlements. Because if something does happen, regardless, whether it's Washington, whether it's, you know, inflation, whether it's something, you know, around the world, a life settlement is not going to be affected by anything. It's completely its own bubble.
Well, and another thing, it's not going to be like our bank accounts where they're going to come in here, and if we've got $600 and above, they're going to start looking at how much money we've got. That's one thing about it.
Yeah.
You know, a life settlement, they won't be interested in that, because they can't see them get their hands on any cash.
Yeah.
So you know, that's a blessing right there.
That's true. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I thought about that this week. I said, you know, they're going to come in and look at everything we've got to see if they can find one dime that they can lay their hands on. Well, if it's in life settlements, there's not any money they can lay their hands on because it's in a life insurance policy. I think that might be a good thing. And I think lots of times if you're conservative, you may want part of your money in life insurance policies rather than all of it in the stock market. That's just my opinion. I think that it's safer. It's not going anywhere. These life insurance companies pay off. They pay the face amount of the policies. They don't ever ask you to take less.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
And especially if you are accredited. Mm. You know, we still have some people that are not accredited. And I find that people who are not accredited, they're up and down, and they're all around. But people who are accredited are steady. They're straight on all the time. And they have extra money. They have money for emergencies, and they're supposed to have. And so they don't panic if something goes over. They don't panic if we say, okay, you know, you need to do this with your investments. They're just straight on. And that's why the government says these people must be accredited. So accredited people think different. They have different values because they have different amounts of money and they have more assets. And I think that's a good thing. So our people are accredited. They make either $200,000 a year or they're worth $1 million without their home. And a lot of people are worth a lot more than that are with us.
And that is a requirement for a life settlement.
Yeah, and they're not worried. If something happens day to day, it's not a big deal to them. Their life goes on. They're not hovering every day to see what their policies are doing. If you're in the stock market and you're not accredited, you're up three or four times a night checking as it went down in Europe. Is it going up? Is it going down? How much have I lost today?
Yeah. That's not a good comforting place to be. That's a lot of anxiety and stress.
It does. It causes a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. And remember, the goal for everybody is to make interest and to make it safely and to retire happy and wealthy.
Yeah. And, you know, not only is the life settlements itself completely, you know, separate from anything that goes on in the world, the value won't go down when the policy matures. You know, they're still going to pay out whatever the policy is. They're not going to decide, well, you know, the stock market's down in Europe today, so we're only going to pay like 70% of the policy. That's not how life insurance works. Not only is there that, but also people have an opportunity to, I guess, and this is, forgive me if I say this wrong, because I've never said this before, but in looking at everything that's kind of like on the table in front of us that you just laid out, it seems like people can actually invest more, you know, like normally if you're in the stock market, to be conservative, you might want to start to pull back a little bit and invest less. But it seems like with life settlements, you can literally invest more because they are so conservative and they are so free of external variables that could affect it, people can invest more safely with a life settlement. Is that accurate, or am I looking at this wrong?
I think so. I think you can do more, and all of my clients have steadily increased their holdings over the years. Like maybe twice a year, they'll bring another 50, they'll bring another 100 over or more. Because they're doing well, they can see that it's working.
Yeah.
So they want to put a little bit more in at all times. And that's what they do. They may have started small. Now they're a lot larger with us. We've had two or three that have gotten a divorce. And that's hurt them a lot. Because, you know, if you've got an IRA and you get a divorce, the wife gets half of the IRA.
Yeah.
And so we've had people that were doing very well. Then they got a divorce, so now they've only got half of that IRA they started with. So now they've got to really work at it to get their IRA back to where it was. I have a doctor that's been with us now several years. When he came to us, he was down to $145,000 in his IRA because he had had to give half of it to his ex-wife.
Mm.
And now he's doing a lot better. He's making money. He's making money with us. And now he's back where he should be. But a lot of times things happen to you, you know, and you have to deal with it. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah. And sometimes you get sick and you have to retire early. Well, that hurts because you're not making that money. You don't have all that cash coming in. So you have to take action. You have to put your money where you can make the most, especially if you're unable to work.
Yeah. And any time you can reduce risk of losing it all, you know, like you say, you're not up all night checking to see if you still have anything left in your portfolio. Anything you can any time to reduce the risk of losing everything, especially as every day that goes by and you get closer and closer to retirement, the more conservative you want to be. It just makes sense. The numbers are there. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. There's lots and lots of good things on our website. It tells you how much people have made, what kind of policies they've been in, and how soon they got paid. And that's real important. And every bit of it is real people. We've just put their initials where you won't know who they are.
Yeah. Initials have been changed to protect their
their privacy.
I can't remember what it
was.
To protect the innocent.
That's real important. Yeah, my clients do not want anyone to know how much they've made or what they've made.
Well, yeah.
But our clients do recommend us all the time, and I really appreciate it. You know, all these people have been with us all these years. They recommend us all the time. But most of our clients come because somebody recommended us, either somebody they work with, and usually it's somebody you work with, or it's an uncle or an aunt with us. We have one couple of ranchers. They have a daughter in Houston, Texas. It's a doctor, and they've been with us for years. And last year she came to us and said, you know, my mom and dad have been with you all these years. They've made money, and I'd like to invest with you. And she invests with us on a regular basis. Every time we have a policy, she's the first one in it.
Really?
And, yeah. And as I said, we have a lot of doctors that are with us that have retired, you know, and they know policies. They know how sick the people are or how sick they're not. They've been with us a long time, and they've done very well. And it's always shocking the different types of people that are with us, whether it's a doctor, whether it's a lawyer. We have some CPAs that invest with us regularly. And then we have owners of lots of businesses. And then everybody else is somehow involved in the oil and gas business, one way or the other.
You know, and you mentioned all the referrals that you get. That's a big deal. I know a lot of people, you know, don't really realize that. But for somebody to have enough confidence and have enough success to actually risk a relationship, whether it's a, you know, a personal relationship, a friendship, a family type of relationship, you know, because if people recommend something, they're putting their own neck out on the line as well. And
they're saying this is a good company. Yeah. We can recommend it without any reservations.
Yeah.
And as I say, we have lots of people that the son-in-law's with us, the mother-in-law. I mean, we've got a lot of people. I've got one family. It's the mother and her two sons. They're in business together. They've been with us quite a while. I can't even tell you. And then I've got Rick. Rick has a place here. He's got a place in New Mexico. He's got one in Indiana. And Rick started out small with us, him and his dad. And he's been with us a lot of years. He has a lot of policies. His business, he's so trustworthy. These people, when they need new equipment, he's been with them 20 years. They'll call him and buy their new equipment from him. It's one of those good stories. He started out very, very small. He's not small now, and he's one of our good guys. We've got so many people I could name and that have been with us a long time. Charlotte's been with us a long time, and we've got so many, you know, good people that have been with us forever.
Wow, that's a really big deal.
And they recommend us all the time, and I appreciate it. And we just love all of our clients. I don't know if we ever say that, but we do love them. They're great people. They're the salt of the earth.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And it's nice to know that that they're appreciated as well. You know, so many so many businesses don't necessarily show their appreciation or, you know, extend a thank you like that. And that's a big deal. I think that has a lot to do with, you know, why you've been doing this so long and have been able to bring so many other people on board as well. So congratulations for that. You should be commended for it.
You know, we've been with the Better Business Bureau since 2003.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
an accredited business with them. And we have a lot of, we don't put our referrals, our, you know, references at the Better Business Bureau. They're at our website.
Yeah.
And I know the Better Business Bureau is always saying, Faye, send, you know, your references over here. Well, we've got them on our website.
Mm-hmm. All out there for everybody to see.
That's right. So we love new customers, we love our old customers, and we just try to do the best job we can to make them money, and it'll pay off in the end.
And that's what it's all about, really, just making money and doing it the right way. We're a little tardy with trivia, but normally around this time on Saturday mornings, we get into to some fun stuff. So what is our topic this morning?
It is steamboats.
Yes.
Now, do you remember steamboats?
Yes, vaguely, but yes.
Well, if you remember Mark Twain, you know, in his day, he painted a handsome picture. That he said they were magnificent, they were regal. He could just see them peacefully gliding down the Mississippi. It was a marvel of its time, as you know. It was stories of floating palaces, steamboat races, and as you know, once we got steam, they could go 5 miles an hour.
Really?
And the residents of Fort Bend County, it was not that glamorous. It was a welcome sight, of course. And the most popular steamboat was called the Showboat. Ooh. And it was created for the wealthy, and it came equipped with grand salons, elegant heavy wood furniture, gilded ceilings, mirror-lined walls, and the wealthy traveled in private cabins on the upper decks. But the poor people, they bunked on the freight decks and slept on bales of cotton. But they had a lot of exploding boilers, they had collisions. And then steamboats came to Texas. In 1829, the first steamboat came to Texas. And it was a tiny little thing. It was called Ariel. And Henry Austin, he was a cousin of Stephen Alf Austin, they asked him to come to Texas to get a land grant. So he bought the steamship. He later abandoned it on the San Jacinto River. But by 1800s, we had 12 boats on the Brazos River.
Really?
And the average steamboat was 30 by 90 feet long. Some of them were even 200 feet long. And they traveled entirely, of course, above the surface. And back then, of course, they said, anywhere you had a little spot on your plantation, you just lay some stage planks to the shore. But Texas, the Republic of Texas, we depended heavily on the rivers, the streams to move cotton logs, livestock, brick, everything from our frontier towns, textile mills, because you couldn't go overland. You know, we had muddy roads. You'd get stuck. So people were looking. And the little Ariel, as I said, it came in 1829, and it was the first steamship on a Texas river. And it tried the Rio Grande. Well, they moved it to the Brazos in August of 1830. And then they retired it near Hattiesburg. But then the Culega began working the Brazos in 1834. And they put the steamship on there. Now, remember, the Brazos is muddy. It's difficult to imagine it as being able to even navigate it. It was shallow. It was twisting. It was muddy. It was filled with sandbars. But land transportation was worse. And the roads to Houston were just ruts. They became too deep to manage. And when it rained, you couldn't go anywhere. And, of course, Galveston had the advantage over Houston as a port city because of the Brazos. And all these frontier members, they were stubborn. They managed to eliminate all the things between Valesco and Washington. There was a major sandbar at the mouth of the river. So they made an inland canal connecting Galveston and the Brazos. And upon the arrival of the railroads, of course, the paddle heelers, it was the best way of getting produce. And the standard in living was far removed from the coast. And Washington on the Brazos, you had Warren. It was a ferryboat landing. And now it could support warehouses and stores, taverns, churches. So when the steamboat reached the town of Warren, the planters said, here's our cotton. They took it to the river. They had 5,000 bales of cotton back then.
Really?
And this is the Brazos River in the early 1800s.
Jeez.
Yeah, and then Henry Austin, he was a cousin of Stephen F. Austin, he brought the first steamboat, that little one, and then the next one was Yellowstone. And Henry Jones operated a plantation and a ferry landing. And one of Austin's old 300, these are the colonists, the first 300 Anglos to settle in Texas.
Really?
And even though the Brazos River had it had all these limbs, had all these brush in it. These old guys would navigate it. And the story was, this one guy said, well, there's only 2 or 3 feet of water. He'd say, full steam ahead. His saying was, tap a keg of beer and we'll run 4 miles on the prompt.
Nice.
And the Brazos up and down, it was a mess. But the lower Brazos was wider, deeper, at Brazoria and Columbia, and it was called Bell's Landing. And the river grew treacherous. It was rocky. It had sunken cottonweeds in it. But as I said, this guy said, just full speed ahead, take the beer. The froth will get us the rest of the way. So at one time, we had 12 steamboats on our Brazos River here, right here in Texas. And people wouldn't even believe we had steamboats, but we did.
Well, they were flat, right?
That's right.
So that they could handle all the terrain and whatnot.
That's right. And they were low. In that 2 or 3 feet of water, they could make it work. And they had to navigate, of course, the Brazos, because it had everything in the world in it. But it hauled a lot of cotton. It's what made the early settlers in the early 1800s. Can you imagine? They created warehouses, taverns, churches, schools along the way, and all of them had to get their things to market. And everything was going to New Orleans. That's where everything was going. And the paddle wheelers, they were the best possible way of getting their produce to market and returning with supplies to make them comfortable along here. But most people don't realize that we had 12 paddle wheelers operating and steamboats right here on the Brazos River.
I'd have never guessed. I know it.
We had 12 of them. And they said they had 30 to 40 people running them.
Jeez.
Now, I can't even imagine that.
I know it. Especially, what would you say, 200 feet long?
Yeah, 200 feet long. And they were narrow where they could get up and down, the river. But we had 12 boats operating. And as I said, some of them were 30 feet wide, 90 feet long, and then some of them were 200 feet long. And they operated economically, successfully, and that steam engine was what did it. Before they had the steam engine, it wouldn't have worked here.
Yeah.
But once they got the steam engines and had that extra power, they could go 5 miles an hour down the river.
And back then, I mean, that was kind of a big deal. It sounds kind of like ridiculous, but it's like that was kind of a big deal, in the
1800s. It was a big deal.
These
steamboats were so popular and did such a good job. And places like Jefferson, Texas, they have an inn to commemorate the steamboat, and it's called the Steamboat Inn over in Jefferson, Texas.
Really?
And so there's a lot of stuff over in East Texas because of this that they still celebrate it. And, the smoke out of those things was tremendous. You could just see it for miles around. And, of course, the wealthy people had these nice suites and everything. But operating in Texas, of course, it was just, they put their cattle on there. They put their bales of cotton, their corn on there to get it to New Orleans. So I don't think in Texas they had all those nice suites like they did on the Mississippi. Mark Twain was talking about, Mark Twain could tell a story better than anybody in the world.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He made it colorful and beautiful, but there was a lot of work involved when they came to Texas. And, of course, the little Ariel didn't last long. And then the other ones that came behind it did and operated for many years. Even after the railroads, they needed the steamboats in Texas. And a lot of people don't even know that we even had steamboats.
I had no idea. It just doesn't, I don't know why, but it was not on my radar at all.
Yeah, and it operated all the way to Galveston, to get everything to New Orleans. And it was just an amazing thing that somebody thought of bringing them to Texas. And then Stephen F. Austin's cousin, he brought the bigger one in. And the rest was history after that. They had 12 of them.
Yeah, it's really great for, commerce and stuff like that, especially back then, when people, you mentioned, the towns that had, sprung up along the way. It's just they built, not cities, but they built towns along modes of transportation like that because it's right there and it made no sense to travel, hundreds of miles with a wagon full of stuff just to put it on a boat. So it worked out really, really well. It's actually quite efficient from what it sounds like. It was a really a big breakthrough.
Yeah, and the city of Richmond, it became a prosperous trade center because of it, they could bring their livestock, they could bring the cotton, the logs, the brick, whatever they needed, and put it on these ships. And, if they hadn't had all these little towns on the way, the Brazos wouldn't even been needed. But they all sprang up along there, and all of them have got stories to tell. And like Jefferson, Texas, all these became what they did because of the steamboats.
Yeah, it's something, it's part of our history that we don't think about very often.
How many people would even know that back then in the 1800s we had steamboats going up and down the old Brazos River?
Honestly, I had no clue. None whatsoever. I feel like I should
have.
But I
loved Mark Twain.
Yeah. He could take a terrible situation and really kind of romanticize it and make it sound like it's really cool or this really something that it really wasn't, but very talented.
And I didn't mention that we had Indians at that time, and then the boilers were sometimes exploding and things like that. They made it all seem just perfect, you know?
Yes.
They didn't talk about the Indian attacks. They didn't talk about the boiler explosions and all those kind of things.
They left the danger out.
They left the danger out and put the good stuff in, folks.
Yeah. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And speaking of danger, I know we were talking about, you know, life settlements and all the wonderful opportunities that it presents, you know, especially with people getting closer to retirement, especially with things, you know, maybe on the horizon that might be concerning to people. It's all a wonderful opportunity, but there are three major risks, and I know we like to go over those every show. So what's the first biggest risk when it comes to a life
settlement? The biggest risk is it can go over. If you can't stand it to go over, it's not the right investment. If you're accredited, of course, that's not going to bother you a lot because you know it's safeguarded. You know you'll get paid. But it could go over. You have to be prepared for it to go over. The second risk is it's not cash. You cannot take cash out until it matures. And we put that in every contract. Remember that, folks. We always tell you, you cannot take your cash out until it matures. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. We've not had one go under in Texas. We've not had one go on nationally in years and years because somebody will buy it because of the amount of premium income that comes in every day of the year.
It's just a huge moneymaker.
It is. I mean, they do make a lot of money. Everybody should own a life company.
Well, just throw that out there at random.
I did. I mean, just if you don't have enough to do, buy a life company.
Wow.
Hey, but you don't really want to own one. I'll tell you why. It is checked and rechecked. You have state auditors and you have federal auditors every year.
Oh, Lord. I'm sure the regulations.
Yeah, they are audited to death.
Man, that would be a headache and a half. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. They're audited and audited again, so everybody knows exactly how much cash they've got. They know what their liabilities are. They know what reserves they've got up. They check them every year for everything.
Yeah. It's important too, and I guess that kind of goes back to some of the safety net. I guess the confidence maybe that people can
have.
They
have to have a safety net because they write billions of dollars worth of life insurance.
Yeah, and what is it that with the they've got to have enough reserves on hand?
Yes, to pay these policies because they're writing life insurance policies, so they make them put up reserves in case these policies came due, that they've got to be able to pay off. It's not, well, we'll go get the money. You've got to have the money.
They have to stay solid.
They have to be above reproach, I can tell you that.
All right, so for people to get started, for people to, you know, maybe they've been thinking about it, and I know you have a lot of people who procrastinate. They think
they
about
do.
Getting into these things. That's always like your big thing.
Yeah, procrastination. We have people that procrastinate for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Then I get a call, and they say, Faye, I've decided to come and see you. And I'm going, my, you've been listening that many years?
Better late than never, you know?
That's right. It's better to come and see us and just quit talking about it.
Yeah. And so anybody that's at that place where it's just like, okay, this is my week, I'm going to do it, I'm going to get started, they do need to call for an appointment. They shouldn't just try to show up or, you know, whatever. And you do have appointment availability this week, right?
That's exactly right. We'll be seeing people, talking to people on the phone as well as appointments, okay?
And one last time, what's your phone number for people to make an appointment?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.